Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 44 of On Tap with Corey and Ira, your bi-weekly exploration of Southern Minnesota breweries and beer, and as you'll find out today, occasionally, some other fermentation friends. I am Corey Butler.
And I'm Ira Carlson.
And we are the two putzes leading you through today's show. Ira, why don't you tell the fine folks listening what's on tap today?
Yeah, we have a fun show coming up. We had a little bit of a scheduling issue, so our original guest was not able to make it. But we luckily enough have a very local friend that is more than happy to bring us out there and actually has a lot to talk about. So we're heading out to Keepsake Cidery in Dundas, that long drive south out there to go visit Nate and the rest of his crew out there in his beautiful new tap room.
Now, Dundas, have you brought them up before on the show?
I don't know. It's one of those communities that may or may not have, I may or may not have talked about once or twice.
The small burg of Dundas.
Yeah, of course.
Small town with a dream in the south, right? Yeah.
But no, we get a chance to, we're going to be out there recording live at Keepsake, where we get a chance to check out their really beautiful new tap room, including, as they call them, toasties, some wonderful, made with lots of local ingredients and such, and also find out how they're collaborating with other local vendors and stuff. So it's going to be really fun to get out there and talk to him and hear how he's doing 1 year later, and obviously doing quite well, weathered the storm well and all the rest of that. So we got, of course, a style of the weekend. We're going to be talking a little bit of vanilla porter and, of course, a couple of good beers coming in from Firehouse Liquor. Some new ones that neither you or I have tried before, and so it's going to be kind of fun to widen our palate.
Yeah, I'm excited to get into those. You were showing them to me a little bit earlier, and they're two styles I like and two new beers I haven't had, so it's always good to see how people approach different styles. And it's a well-known brewery worldwide, so I'm excited to try them out. You're alluding to Nate and Keepsake, and it's kind of fun that we now know enough people that when we're in trouble, we can call on somebody. And you had mentioned maybe it was about a year ago. It was actually only 6 months ago he was on the show. It was actually pretty recent, and that was his first time on the show. But we were talking throughout the summer that, oh, man, we really should have him on in the fall because that's really prime time for them, obviously, with the with the harvest and the growth season. And that's when they start pressing a lot of stuff. And just it's busy times because everyone thinks apples come September and October. So it actually kind of was a blessing in disguise and perfect timing to have Nate on. So obviously that's great. And it's a great place. I was out there just last weekend with my family testing it out. They had only been open, I don't know, maybe a month or two at this point. Pretty recent that they finished the final touches on their tasting space. And as you said, they've got the toasties and they've got other food and other items there to try. And Nate does a cool soda that my kids loved. So I can't wait to talk to more about that stuff. But again, blessing in disguise that he was available and we made room for him.
Yeah, well, and I've got we were out there recently and came home with a couple of bottles of cider and one other thing that I alluded to the last show when we talked to Nate, but I'll save that for our actual conversation with Nate. But you'd be amazed what you can leave. Yeah, you'd be amazed what you can leave Keepsake with. So anyways, yeah, I'm really looking forward to heading out there. We're actually going out there when we're recording this. We're going to be going out there tomorrow. So we're both in anticipation of that day.
Yeah, and he was incredibly giving while we're out there. I was watching him work with other customers and bringing up some apples for people to try. And I think we're in for a quiz for tomorrow. He's going to bring over some of his different species of apples and give us a quiz. And he was kind of telling my wife and kids and I about the sugar component. And you know, he can speak more technically about this, obviously, but kind of how the organic approach affects the apples and sometimes can make them a little bit sweeter. And you know, there's so much that goes into it: sun exposure and soil and what goes on and what doesn't go on the crop. So he'll talk more about that. I think we're going to get a lot of education as we did in April when he was on. And I think we both left that initial interview like, wow, that was cool. We learned a lot about something that we, you know, despite being in an apple growing state, didn't really know that much about and then what they had done with the apples. So stick around for that. That's definitely going to be a worthwhile conversation. And obviously we'll get to highlight the new space, which is, again, open to everybody to go check out Saturdays and Sundays, I think, through the end of the year, or at least when the snow falls.
Pretty much. I think he's got it pretty wide open, and they, of course, now have the nice, wonderful indoor tap room, and then, of course, some outside seating. So plenty of space to go visit.
It's a great compliment to the rest that we've got going on in the Northfield area. And we talked about the prior show that Nate was on here back about 6 months ago. If you want to listen to that or other shows that we've done, again, this is number 44. So if you're good with math and just subtract one, that means we've done 43 other shows. And ontapnorfield.com is a great place to start to find all our archive shows. Otherwise, you can find them at your podcast platform of choice, iTunes, Google Play, etc., etc. We're active on social media, the old Facebook, the Twitter, and the Instagram. We put photos and videos and updates about places we're visiting, people we're seeing. So also a cool place to keep up with what we're doing. Facebook is the best place to search for us to find upcoming guests. We are still working on kind of the fall, winter. We've got a couple ideas we're kicking around, and hopefully we'll confirm that soon. And I should say for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, just search for On Tap Norfield, and you should find us in any of those places by searching that term. We have a really fun one coming up here with Nate. Stick around.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us this week by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering, actually both of our offerings today, are coming out of McKellar Brewing out of San Diego. Now, you may have heard of McKellar. We've talked about them a little bit on previous shows. They're actually a Danish company that has generally does more collaboration, some interesting things. History is probably a little too hard to go into. We're researching.
Feel free to Google yourself.
Yeah, it's a lot of interesting stuff. It's definitely a different way to brew beer.
A lot of collaboration, a lot of vision,
and everything else. But they do actually have two U.S. breweries, one in San Diego and one in New York. But anyways, this one is their Windy Hill New England Style India Pale Ale. Nice, beautiful color, really hazy. If the sun were out right now, I probably couldn't see through this one. Extremely tasty, 7%.
It's a bit cloudy.
Yeah, it's a bit cloudy. Yeah. It is a very, very nice beer. Probably one of the most solid New England style IPAs. I don't think it's jumping out at me as too hoppy, too tart, too sweet, everything. It's really good to its style.
Yeah, there's definitely a nice juiciness that comes through it, nice hop presence. Like you said, there's with this style, it's a little bit softer in the mouthfeel. So it's a pleasant drinking beer. You know, pairing with the other one, which we'll get to in a minute, it's a little difficult because they're so different in what you should expect from drinking them that maybe they're kind of counteracting each other. So as we sit here and sample both of these and on the back end of sampling some other beers, you know, of course, we have a little bit of palate fatigue, but that flavor still comes through. And I think that's just... That's a credit to what McKellar has done in the last, 12 years and the brand they've built that, first and foremost, outside of all these cool collaborations, it's about making good beer. And whether it's in Denmark or the U.S. or Singapore, because they've got locations that they work with throughout the world.
They make
good beer.
In over 40 countries.
Yeah, and they've got like 12 home bases, technically, I guess.
It's a completely different business model, but no, I love this beer. I mean, it is just... And the funny part is, of the two, this one's not my favorite. And this is a solid, solid
beer. Which is
beer.
A surprise, because that's usually in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, I know. But this is a solid beer. I mean, it really hits all the marks that it should. It's not going to jump at you in a lot of different ways. This is just a quality representation of the style. It's a really good beer.
So, as people who listen to the show know, I tend to go towards hop-driven beers right now, or... big stouts, flavorful stouts, riding that line of Imperial. If it's in the barrel, even better. I mean, and maybe that's the atypical beer nerd these days. And, we don't say we're nerds here. We're enthusiasts. We're not like snobby about it, but that's just where my palate tends to go these days. So on the other hand of this, like you allude to, this is their other offering, the Beer Geek Breakfast Stout, brewed with coffee to boot.
Of course.
So that gives a little added element there. This comes at 7.5% alcohol. Not too big. Again, I think some people that number probably scares off, but I think to your experienced consumer of good craft beer, that's probably not that big of a number.
Well, and especially when you start getting into, I wouldn't say specialty, but more...
adjunct-driven beers.
Yeah. It's not surprising to have that because you're really... you're really crafting a flavor. This isn't designed to be your, you know, a six pack in the sun. It's designed to be, they're brewing a beer to be good.
You turn the wild game on, you might have two of these over the course of 2.5 hours. That's the point of these. You sip them, you enjoy them. It's not that big of a beer where like a Gießenbräu, we're going to sit there with a Russian Imperial Stout and have maybe a 12-ounce pour over that entire game. But you can have two of these. And it's a nice roasty stout, really nice base beer, I'm guessing. And that coffee flavor is just on point. It's not overwhelming, but it melds in really well with the overall flavor. And it's just a top-notch offering of this style, that coffee-driven style flavor, the nice roastiness. It looks beautiful in the glass. And, you know, you look outside, you look at this time of year. I mean, this is home. Oh, yeah. This is what you should be having.
No, I'm so happy with these two offerings that Sean sent over from Firehouse. Well done. And I will be going back and looking for these two beers or the other beers that they may be now offering, because I'm really glad to see that these are now locally available and stuff. Like we talked about, we've seen McKellar before.
We should mention the collaboration beer, right? So with Three Floyds out of Indiana, we've had their beer through them because they've done the War Pigs brand, which I think has three offerings in the States.
With Todd Haug.
Formerly of Surly.
Right. And so, you know, we've already had one of the ones where we kind of talked a little bit about a collaboration. Mm-hmm. And, of course, with a name, you know, being in Minnesota, name like Todd, you know, kind of a, you know, front and forward to it and stuff. So it's really kind of it's really kind of nice to be able to see McKellar on its own and stuff. And these are really good beers. I am really looking forward to seeing more of what's out there. And I think I will go search through the wonderful selection at Firehouse Liquor to see these.
And where can you do that?
And if you want to try either one of these beers or any of the other beers we've talked about on previous shows, they are conveniently located south on Highway 3 in Dundas at Firehouse Liquor.
And thanks to the September tornadoes, you can't look for their sign, but look for the fire truck. Okay, we're now coming to you from the beautiful space in Keepsake Cidery, just south of Dundas, hanging out with Nate, the proprietor and cider master. I guess you probably have a real title. I think we've probably discussed it, but it eludes me right now. But Nate, thanks for having us.
Hey, no problem. It's wonderful to have you here.
And what's your title?
Cider maker would probably be the most accurate.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Yep. I maybe gave you a notch or two extra in the belt, but yeah, we're pretty close. But you know, we had you on the show about 6 months ago. But we thought it was appropriate to come out and visit. Obviously, we mentioned we had a scheduling issue, and you were nice enough to fill us in to help us with the show. But we had actually talked, Ira and I, this summer about having you on the show, and kind of just didn't work with the schedule we had already put together. But everything kind of aligned, and we were able to get out here. And I think it's great because, obviously, this is a very important time of year for you. And obviously, with the new building here that we want to talk about, it's just perfect timing. So we're kind of surprised you were able to squeeze us in, because I'm assuming you're kind of busy with the harvest and the growing season and the new operation here.
Yeah, there's lots of apples to be picked, and we are bottling all day today, and we're pressing all week last week, and there's fences to fix from fallen trees and all that jazz. But I love chatting with you guys, and it is kind of the perfect timing. I mean, we just opened out here. We love this space, you know, the cidery and the toasty farm, but also it's I'm passionate about apples, and in the middle of the harvest season, it's pretty easy to get me talking about apples and all the fun things we're pulling off the trees. And can take time.
We should catch people up for those who aren't maybe local listeners. You'd mentioned lots of trees fall, and it's early October right now. It was about a month ago that we had tornadoes come through the air, and you guys got a little damage from it. A lot of trees down. No structural damage, though, right?
No, we were lucky. Yeah.
But sure. Quite a few trees.
Yeah, we lost some apple trees, but not too many, but lots of trees around the farm down, and couple of them clipped our fence pretty good. So
in terms of growing season, you mentioned some trees coming down. For what you were going to use for the most part for this season, did you pull all those apples off mostly? Or you said you're still doing some picking. So how's that in terms of crop load? I mean, did you have a lot done by then?
Well, a lot of our apples are later season apples.
Okay.
We prioritize apples that bring a lot of sugars and complexities to the cider. And many of those apples, not all, but many of those apples, tend to be later season, October, and even into November.
Oh, wow.
Harvesting.
Does that depend on just the year, too?
It can. Years are earlier than others. There are years that are later. This year surprised me because I don't know if you remember, that spring was a pretty long winter-ish spring.
Yeah.
I thought apples would be a little behind, but actually they're right on time, if not even a little bit earlier than they had been in the past, at least here. We've had to keep on our toes to get them in at the right time, but a lot of our apples are coming in now. It's October when a lot of our apples ripen. But like I said, we have till, you know, some of them go till November. My favorite apple, the Golden Russet, I let that hang till the very last, pretty much the very last, you know, chance I have before a hard frost, because they just keep maturing and ripening. We usually pick those late October, early November.
A little extra time does those guys good.
Yep, and they get a lot. Their sugar levels are really high, and you know, they'll be just a delicious, delicious apple. So
we're out here sitting in this new space. You had it in development last year, and I think you had a couple events last year. Then you had the winter event, and we want to talk about that because that's come up again this year. But late this summer, I believe, midsummer, late summer, it finally officially opened. It's called, what were you calling it, the Toasty Farm?
Or yeah, Keepsake Cidery and Toasty Farm.
And Toasty Farm. It's because it's not just it's warm out here, but you're serving food as well.
Right. We think it's really important. I'm a farmer. I grow food. We love the local food makers and growers in this area. And we also think it's just really important to have food with your drink. Cider is really good with food, and food is really good with cider. They're made for each other. They go perfectly with each other, and we have different ciders that go with different foods. So we wanted to highlight that. We also, you know, we really appreciate people coming out here. We're not that far, but we are a little bit off the beaten track. So we want people to, you know, be taken care of. We want people to know there is food out here. You can bring food, or, you know, you can enjoy a picnic, out here at the farm. But kind of in that same sort of like pizza farm idea, we decided it'd be cool to do a Toasty Farm. And Toasties is a nod to our sort of our, English influences. That's my mentor's English. A lot of my favorite ciders are English. And in England, they call grilled cheese toasties. Mm-hmm. So we do house-made grilled cheese that we think pair really well with cider, using all local, you know, local bread made down at the brick oven, cheeses from Shepherd's Way and Cannonbells in the Cave and Singing Hills, local meats from Prairie Pride, local sauce from T&T Treats. I mean, a lot of really, really cool products, and we've been having a blast.
Well, when I was out here a couple weeks ago, and my wife and I had a couple of the toasties, and ended up buying some of the Cannonbell's cheese, and just sat out here and had a great time. And I absolutely love those sandwiches. They're so good and just nice and simple with all the local, ingredients as you just listed off. I thought that was phenomenal.
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, I'm the cider maker. I have no credit for any of the other food. That goes to Tracy and Gwen Anderson, who does our food here. So.
And I should mention, for those who didn't catch your prior show back in April, they can check that out. It's archived on the KYMN website. It's archived on ontapnorthfield.com and iTunes, all those places. So I bring that up because we're going to talk a little bit about your harvest season and kind of the process, but we're not going to delve into that too deeply today because we want to talk about the space and what you're doing out here. So they can get that education, because it was quite the education we had you on before. Just a huge learning experience for us. I know we've been talking about that basically last 6 months, how much we did learn, and probably mostly didn't retain most of it at this point, but so maybe we should listen back to that show.
Yeah, of course.
But I did want to bring that up because, you know, you'll also get the, if you're a listener, the background on you, Nate, and also the idea of creating Keepsake. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about the vision for this space. Was this always part of that plan? Is this something that came above, ground later on? What was the process behind creating a space like this?
Yeah, that's a good question, because honestly, it was not part of the vision at the beginning. We had a different plan. There was a different partner in the business, and we thought I'd be the farmer down here growing the apples, making the cider, and then they'd probably go up to the cities, and we sell a lot of cider in the cities, and we sell some cider here, but there wouldn't be a very strong,
local
sort of presence, yeah, at the farm. And we thought this is, you know, just going to be the farm. It turns out, and part of the, some things, we learned, actually, I don't know how to say this. We didn't know what we were doing. There you go. That's all I should say. We did not know the realities.
To be honest, right?
Yeah, we didn't realize. We thought the rule was you could have a satellite spot, if you will, but you can't. You have to be on your farm if you're going to do a tasting room. And we also realized that given our product, the best way we can sell it is getting people here, having the experience, coming to the farm and seeing how it's made. It's just the best for a small business.
Having control over the product.
Yeah, it's just we get to be, it has the most integrity for us, for what we're doing. And we want to stay small. That's just, we're very open about our business plan. We don't want to get big. We aren't looking to become a regional distribution cider. We hope we can stay very small. And we love the idea of it being a very efficient, very quality-driven cider that that is mostly sold from the farm. And of course, we'll stick with our partners that we've already made in the cities and in Rochester and around here, our retail spots. We love those spots. But we also want to get more people out here enjoying the farm, enjoying the cider at the source. And we realized that was the smartest thing if you want to stay small. That's what we talked to a lot of different wineries and breweries, and many of them said, you know, it depends on what you want to do. Do you want to get big and become a distribution type cidery or brewery or winery, or do you want to stay small and become a destination, right? So we said, we realized that at the end of the day, we're farmers. We want to stay on the farm. I don't want to spend my time running around the Midwest.
Making deliveries.
Doing deliveries and sales calls and training crews and doing you know, all that comes with being a regional or even a national or international distributed cidery. I want to be a farmer. And in that case, I need to like stick to who I am. And that means I need to build up the farm, build up the destination. That's what we decided. So we put a lot of effort into designing this to be a comfortable, accessible, fun place to come have a delicious our local cider with delicious local food. And we're going to be building as it goes. We're going to be adding music and art. We're going to have, obviously we're surrounded by the old growth woods. We're going to be making sure our trails are nice. We're going to have different picnic spots. I think that we're welcoming other people's creativity and building out this to be, we want this to be a destination. We want this to become really a part of the local community, a place that, that people, frequent on a regular basis. It's part of their life. You know, we want to be part of the local, Northfield, Faribault, you know, Cannon Valley, culture.
So there's been this momentous shift in the last 5 years with the craft culture when it comes to beverages, mainly speaking of breweries and the growth there, having the space that people can come experience the beer, mm-hmm. experience the people behind the beer and everything else that builds out around that. There's some lag behind in other industries, you know, with the cideries, with distilleries and the like, but you guys are catching up. And I bring that up is because were you influenced at all by seeing how in the last 5 years consumers have really embraced that model that says, I want to go experience it, where the people make it, see how it's made, and instead of buying in a store necessarily. I mean, does it make it more viable when you see other places doing so well and having success? You know, 130, 40 breweries, and then a number of other cideries and distilleries and wineries doing it.
I think definitely. We're definitely influenced by it. We are very humble in our, I tell people all the time, don't come to me for business advice. So that being said, I'm constantly looking for business advice, right? I'm constantly asking people about that. That's definitely one of my weaknesses. So I'm constantly keeping my mind open, my ears open, my eyes open for advice on that side of things. We were definitely influenced. I would say mostly, though, by wineries. You know, breweries definitely, but we really started looking at what wineries were doing. You know, many of these wineries have these amazing spots to come out to. There's an experience that we really enjoyed, a connection with the agriculture. You know, there is no, as of yet, and I hope there will be some soon, farm-ish breweries in Minnesota. You know,
sure.
there's some talk around them, but there's none that are like come to the farm and see how things are grown.
Just Dave's Brew Farm in Wisconsin.
Dave's in Wisconsin, yeah. I really like what he was doing over there. Although, is it not around anymore?
It is. I think it's for sale.
For sale.
It's been for sale for a while,
I think. Yeah. Exactly. Other than, I was thinking, Dave's was in my head as I was talking, like, I wonder if someone in Minnesota will do that. I have a friend who's planning on it. I can't wait because he makes amazing beer.
But it's a different experience when you're actually where the grapes are grown, where the apples are grown,
yes.
Maybe where the hops are grown.
Right.
So it'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked to a few brewers that are kind of getting close to that, but no one really to this level of come on out and see everything all in one place,
right.
Kind of a thing. So
I can't wait. I think it will happen soon. I'm really hoping for shout out to Pete's Gold and Anna. I really want them to start one. I know they'll do a great job. I think it's the next thing in brewing is to have like a farm brewery. But yeah, I think that for us, to be honest, wineries were the big influence. That's already the big influence for us. Sour beers and wine is the influence in cider. Traditional cider is obviously the biggest one. That's how we make our ciders. Like we make our cider like traditional ciders over the old world and some really wonderful ciders in the United States that make it in this long aged method. A very, 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 very farm-centric, agricultural-based, you know, product. And those places all have this destination. You go to this place, you see where it's made. It makes sense, especially for this scale. We're learning so much about, we want to stay small, I keep saying, and that's what we're learning is if you want to stay small, you need to be really efficient and get people right to you so that you know, as every little middleman you add to get that cider to LA or get that cider to London, your margin to get cut. That's just the basics of, you know, business. If we can cut all those middlemen out, we can offer a better accessible price and we can do better ourselves, and stay small. And really that's our focus right now. Stay small on all. We think that as a small cider, we can offer more than if we get big. We can make a product that's 100% local apples, which is going to be difficult as we get going here. There's not that many. There's definitely a finite number of apples in the state. Mm-hmm. You know, we're the 17th biggest apple growing state in the U.S. So we don't grow a lot of apples. We grow a lot of great apples. We grow a lot of yummy, delicious dessert apples, but especially on the cider scene, we don't grow a lot of cider apples. So we just decided let's stay small. And that was a big impetus for why we wanted to open this space. And then we also wanted to, we love this. We love where we live. We love this community, and we felt like this should have been our plan from the beginning. Like, we want to be an addition to the community. We want to be another place where people can go enjoy music or art or a lecture or go for a hike or take your kids out and explore the orchard. Or who knows what's going to happen here. We're really excited to see where this place goes. But that, honestly, I'm a little bit shocked that it wasn't our plan from the beginning, was this. And possibly it was just, you know, we're overwhelmed at the time. We're just trying to get off. Get on the ground.
Create the product first.
Yeah, right.
Before you can have the rest of that vision.
I mean, to do that, you talked about destination places and stuff, and I definitely see why you are looking at wineries, because you have met a lot of those kind of same features that I, you know, see at places. So real quick, just looking around this tap room, we're sitting out here. It is absolutely gorgeous in here. You got about 9 seats at a nice tall bar, which you can see as your food and other stuff's being made, and obviously all the wonderful selection of your ciders, but then there's a ton of seating here. You have outside patio space, which literally has fresh concrete, you know, within the last weekend, and, you know, picnic tables everywhere. I mean, this is just an amazing space. I mean, you know, my wife and I already talked about, you know, the idea of hosting friends and, parties out here, because it is such a beautiful space for it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't even know how tall these ceilings are here, but you got this big, beautiful room with, you know, big windows and wonderful woodworking. Whoever did your woodworking here has been amazing. So hats off to you. This is a beautiful space.
We really appreciate that. And that's what we're hoping to hear. We want people to come. Like, you guys came and we want you to have a good time. We want you to come back and we want you to feel comfortable here and feel like you're in a good spot. And the woodworking, just the, shout out to Lars Strohmeyer. He's awesome. He helped us. He helped Loon. He makes some great tables and this beautiful bench here. And then the bar was that was kind of me and the Castle Rock Tree Service guys. But yeah, there's a lot of work, but we think it's well worth it. We're really excited to have you all out and to host and take care of people and have a good time.
Yeah, my family and I were out here this past week, and my wife commented on the woodwork too. It's just a cool element. It's Minnesota. It looks organic, looks real, looks refreshing, inviting, and you've got it implemented throughout the space. And it's around your menu. You got a frame on the menu and the bar, and you've got a nice backsplash. And I think the blue pops well. So just a really inviting, comfortable space. And
thanks.
I could just imagine. I know you guys are going to close down probably before winter, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But you know, having a light snowfall out through the window and maybe a fire out front. I mean, that sip on some cider. I mean, that'd be great.
Right.
But I was going to say, you mentioned, you know, the ideal behind being small, and it really does offer the flexibility. You mentioned Lars and having that small contractor help you build things like that. The partners you have with the food, you know, with the meat, the cheese, the olives, the pickles, and everything else you can get here. I mean, you've got a whole array of items on your menu that both go into the toasties, but also you have some nosh dishes on the side. Mm-hmm. And everything's got a local label on it because it's made from someone within this community, or
right,
at least not too far out. I think you said one thing was from Mankato, God forbid, that far away, but, you know. It's within the southern Minnesota life, so it allows you that flexibility. It's a lot of fun to see that, and for you to be able to approach that collaboration and kind of have that come forward in your dream it's kind of cool to see. And mm-hmm. I think it just reinforces what you try to do with the cider side of it.
Well, and you just talked about naming off even some of those people that you're working with. You've got them listed up there. You have 13 different local collaborators, so that's really nice to see you using, you know, all these different local people for all the different pieces. So,
that's going to be what we're going to do. I mean, that's like we from the get go, we are committed to that. And that it's not, there's not a, there is no other option. It's much easier. We found to not to,
well, you could go down to Cub Foods and buy cheese by bulk.
Right. Right.
You could, but, but that we would just, be your mission, right?
We just don't give ourselves that option. That's, right. That's the way for us. We just don't, we say, you know, we're friends. You know, these cheesemakers, that, you know, we're eating here today with our ciders, both of them, all of them, there's many.
Most of it's gone by
but,
now.
But they, but they both visit here. They've been here many, many times. You know, we trade with Jody. She drinks the wild and trade cheese for bottles of wild. Our farming friends, Open Hands, vegetables, you know, we've been using, these are all friends. I'm gonna support them. You know, there's no other option for us. I can't not support them and then go hang out with them and be like, oh yeah, I just decided to get carrots from California. That's just not gonna happen.
This Crystal Farms cheese in.
Yeah, yeah, right. No, it's just not gonna happen. And that's what we think about. I think, cause I know they're gonna be here, so I have to be accountable, right? Like, you know, if Jody walks in, I've got, yeah, Crystal Farms on, or Cannibal's crew walks in, Jackie walks in and says, Crystal Farms, like, I just couldn't, right. I can't do that. I just cannot do that to my friends. So for us, that's an easy way to help yourself not to compromise, is to become friends with the people that you're buying from, and then you feel accountable, and you know you're gonna see them, you know, you're gonna go over to Chapel and have a beer, and they're gonna walk in, and you're gonna get to talking with them, and you want to be able to say, yeah, we're selling your cheese. Like, you know, that's just, for me, that's a really important part of what we're doing here. We want to build connections. We want to build this community up. We want to give to the community what we feel like we've been given. This is a wonderful place. We're really excited. We're part of a new initiative called Cannon Valley Grown, which is a marketing collaborative, mm-hmm. that hopefully you guys will hear about. That's producers like us, you know, Keepsakes Cidery, but also Mom the Farmer. But then we also are, you know, we're going to be including the breweries and the bakeries and the cheesemakers and all the farmers, and telling our story, the Cannon Valley story. And I think that part of that starts, you start using each other's products, because again, the more you know each other, the less you want to let each other down. And if we don't support each other and we don't to buy cheese from my local dairies, they're not going to be here in a few years. And then I'm going to be forced and then to buy from far away. And frankly, this cheese is better too.
The creators and suppliers don't support each other, how do you expect the consumer to do it? Because you guys are the ones telling the stories, not only your own, but your friends as well. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
So someone might come here the first time to try your cider, but then they realize, oh, there's a local cheesemaker. Well, that's cool. Let me check them out. Or someone who makes pickles. You know, that's how you spread the word. So it's cool to hear about that cooperative effort.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But let's talk about your product. You've got a few of them in front of us, some new ciders. Maybe one old friend that's been around for a while, but a new one for sure. What do we have in front of us?
So let's start with the old friend, but this is the newer, this is this year. So 2017's harvest. So last time I was with you guys, we had 2016's harvest. It's 2017's harvest. It's the wild, spontaneous ferment. These two ciders I picked for us today, and then we'll try the current Geronia later, because I wanted to show you something. We're going 100% wild this year. So no yeast will be pitched, except for maybe our ice cider. Which is like 2% of our production. So 98% of our production will be wild ciders.
So what does that mean for those who don't
know? So no yeast will be pitched. The fermentation will start spontaneously. It does not necessarily mean that they're all wild yeast.
Open vessels, stuff flowing
right.
in the air.
So it'll be whatever yeast are in our cidery. So that might be an old commercial yeast, like a wine yeast that we've used before, or it might be something totally different from an orchard we brought in, or, I mean, the doors of the cidery opened one day and a little yeast guy fell on the cloth and
a little floater.
Had some friends and they made some more of it. You don't know. There can be a lot of different yeast and bacteria in that concoction, and they start the fermentation and they ferment it. That's what you get. So what I did today was our normal wild and then our orchard reserve, I call. The wild is the reason I'm showcasing these two with you guys today. I wanted you to taste is the wild yeast on both of these, but one is just late season. Orchard Reserve is late season apples, specifically apples I think bring some unique qualities like Arkansas Black, Ida Reds, Keepsake, Chestnut, Liberty. And then the other ones are wild, which is going to be a mix of all sorts of apples, short, like the early season, like Dolgo Crabs, Duchess of Odenberg, State Fair even, which I think brings a lot of aromatics. And then some late season apples too that we think are great for local ciders like Sweet 16s and, well, that's not a late season apple, it's a mid season, but Cortland, Connell Red, and some other apples from our friend partner orchards. But it's cool to chase these two sizes next to each other because I find them very different.
Yeah. That's because you have a developed palate. I'm looking at IRL puzzled over here. No, there's noticeable differences. I know I can't break it down in a way that's going to make sense to the listeners, but maybe you want to draw out some of those differences for people who, if they end up coming here and trying these or getting them in the store.
Yeah, I love talking about these two ciders together. It's been my new thing. So thanks.
Yeah, you bet.
So the normal wild, what I like about it, when this is what I'm learning, and I'm a cider maker, but really I don't consider myself a cider maker. I have so much to learn. There's so much that I need. And when I get only one harvest a year to learn, I feel like 20 years from now, I think I'll be able to speak with some sort of expertise. But until then, I'm just, and even then, I'm a learner. I'm just trying to figure things out. But it's been really fun for the last few years as I start to really get to know my raw ingredients, which is local apples. And, the wild, the first one we had, to me, I was really trying to go for less acidity, more fruit, but very dry. This is bone dry cider. No sugars left in the cider. But I wanted it more fruit and floral, but still have a nice acidity in the background. And I think we got that this year. I'm really excited about this one. I get, and maybe you don't, but I every time I drink it, I get like I'm standing in like a wildflower prairie grass type place. It's just real grass and wildflowers. And
I can definitely picture that. I don't know if I would have known that without you describing it, though.
No, but I liked it. I mean, it was really a nice full-bodied flavor to it with that dryness in it. And, yeah, I can see where you're saying, well, picking up some of those extra flavors and everything else. And is that kind of what the wild yeast does bring it with, because it's going to bring some of what's around you in to the flavor?
I think it definitely contributes to complexity, I believe. And that's why we're going with wild. We want to make the most complex, interesting, distinct cider that you can out of local apples. And so for us, we realize wild yeast brings that. I'm not going to sit here and claim it's the cleanest ferment. It isn't. That's not what we're looking for. I think clean sometimes can be a bad word if you ask me.
Sure.
I don't personally, and I'm going to try to make something that I personally like. My least favorite ciders, wines, beers are not necessarily a cider or beer or wine that someone took a risk on and didn't work. It's the boring ones. It's just a boring.
Looks like it's been strained 20 times.
Yeah, it's like just boring, clean, filtered, and that's just my personal opinion. Last night I'm watching my Colorado Rockies beat the Cubs, and I'm drinking a wild sour. That's my beer. When I drink my ciders, I like that complexity. So yes, the wild yeast do bring, I think, that complexity, but also it really depends on, and that's why I like this these two ciders side by side. I find the apple contributes the most, though. The yeast is a really important part, but the apple is the most important part. And for these two, just very different apple blends bring very different distinctive drinks.
Well, and I think those are good points, because I think we see the evolution of the craft drinker. Again, it doesn't matter if we're talking about beer, cider, wine, or spirits. People are always chasing something different, something new, just to widen their own palates. Mm. So with you going the wild fermentation, that kind of meets that a little bit, because every year it's going to be different.
Like, oh, yeah.
You might have the same label on it, but did you have any reservations about having concerns about people who might say, well, I got this last year and this tastes, for those people who are savants and apparently call back a flavor from a year prior. I don't know these people, but apparently they're out there. But, you've got the wild, and obviously you put a year on it, but is there any concern about the pushback from that? It's like, well, this isn't how I remember, or people who do side-by-sides if they hold on to a bottle for a while. Any concern about that, just that you lose maybe that consistency factor? I don't want to say boring factor, but consistency factor.
Right. No, I'm not concerned at all about that. I never have been. It's a very common question, because consistency in some ways dominates the market. The big players, that is their number one goal, consistency, mm-hmm. not only year to year.
Wherever you pick up that beer across this country or across the world, it should taste the same. Yeah,
geographically and temporally, this is going to be
consistent. Doesn't matter the water, makeup, all that, it should be the same.
But I'm dedicated to a very different ideal. I'm a farmer. I'm a local farmer. I want you to taste local fruit. And you take any apple you want. You pick an apple, and you somehow, if you're able to, if you're one of those savants, remembers flavors.
Right.
That apple's going to change the year to the year to the year. Sugar levels are going to change. Acid levels are going to change. Phenolics are going to change. Size is going to change. The amount of apples you harvest, especially in a state like Minnesota. I love growing apples here, but it is like riding a Bronco. You know, it's just, you're just a bucking Bronco and you're just trying to keep on. Cause some years you're going to get a lot of, Harrelsons, and some years you're going to, this year we had a great harvest of Chisel Jersey, a ton of tannin. I mean, these are bitter, bitter apples, but they were small because they concentrated their flavors for whatever reason, higher sugar. But next year I might get 10% of those Chisel Jerseys and they might all have half the bitterness. Who knows? Like, there's just too many variables. So if my ideal is local apples and local farming, then I have to throw consistency out the window, because that's just not, unless, I guess I should go back, unless I want to bury it in sugars and flavors and mask the inconsistencies, which again is not what we're going to do.
And that was kind of the point, that it's kind of a misnomer that even changing one thing every year, like the yeast, and changing because it's wild, is that it's somehow going to change your product. It was changed anyway. Right. And you delved into why, the apples for sure from the start. You don't know every year, apple to apple, the sugar content, the soil makeup, everything affects that. So I think that's important for people to know. It doesn't matter if we're talking about ciders or beer. You know, those hop contents year to year are changing constantly. Their yeast is changing. The malt is changing. Everything changes. And they might make it as close as they can because they have a recipe they're working off. But again, unless you have some weird talent that you can really draw out those flavors and store them away for a year in your mind, like, as long as you enjoy it, then that's all that matters.
Right. We say that. Consistently delicious. That's what I want to try to do.
I like that. Well, so I think it's interesting because Ira brought up changes. You brought up the dynamic nature of what you're doing here. And I think most people, if you ask them on the street, when does cider come out? And I think they probably only think the fall. So yeah. How do you sustain, again, this won't necessarily be year-round now, but you put product out all year. Mm-hmm. How does that process work? How can you be making product all year?
Right. So we're pressing it in the fall, and it's aging for, you know, it can age up to 18 months. We have not released many ciders past or before 6 or 7 months. Most of the time it's between 8 and 12 months. But yeah, we have some ciders that'll be aged even longer.
Why 8 to 12? Is that just the chain that you've got?
Or ciders taste really good right around then. Like, that's when they're like, hey, these are great. Other ciders we age longer. We love the guys over at Loon. Simeon texted me today saying he's got more staves for us. We age our cider for a while on their whiskey staves. Yeah. So that cider we usually age 12 to 14 months before we even bottle it.
The wooden spirits.
Right.
That's a solid one.
It's in my fridge at home.
It's fun. It's a fun cider. And I really like this year's. We upped it a little bit on the wood and the spirit.
All right. So I look forward to.
Yeah. It should be great. Most of the time we bottle between that 8 to 12. And then the cider just has a good shelf life. It's changing, and so that way we do have this sort of year-round available product, because it doesn't go bad in 3 months or 8 months or 10 months. It retains its freshness. It's more like a wine that can, like a red wine that can get better over time. Mm-hmm. And cider sales are very seasonal, as they are right now. We're trying to work on that because we think a good wooden spirits, you know, whiskey stave aged cider is a fantastic cider for the winter, and we think ice cider is just as good, or not even, maybe even better, a nice 14% ice cider next to the fire. That'll warm you up. And then, you know, summertime, nothing beats a dry cider with barbecue and a little sweet cider with some spicy tacos. And then, of course, the fall, it just cannot get better than, from my point of view, I'm all about in the fall, it's cider and Oktoberfest. That's just what I'm drinking.
Sure.
So I think it's for every season, and we like to make that cider that has that voice that you can find a cider for every season.
Well, it's an education point, and right, I'm guessing this is giving you face-to-face contact when people come out here to educate them, not only about what's currently out, but what they can look forward to in the future and throughout the year. So again, another opportunity of having people in your own backyard to build that base. So,
and one thing that, real quick to point out that I just want to, this we have found true in our own business and on a lot of other ciders like ourselves, the cider in this wine bottle made like we do. But it's a big time holiday. Our sales are much higher than some of the big cider makers during the holidays because people recognize how wonderful it is with food, that it's celebratory, it's great to bring to family and friends. And I love the fact that Keepsake Cider has become part of a lot of people's tradition during the holidays because I love the holidays. I love getting together with family. I love celebrating life. I love celebrating the end of the year. And it's cool for me to see, because this product for us is kind of our keepsake, our gift, something we're working really hard on to bring to the community, and to see it kind of take that spot in that tradition of the holiday tradition has been really special for us. We hope that continues.
But as a business owner, you hope they start picking up a little more often than just.
But yeah, you can
right?
you can also. So we're still here in January yeah. and February.
I mean, it's a nice thought. Like we're the special occasion bottle, but that was coming on the heels of you saying we're a year round product too. So it's probably hard to get past that in some people's minds that it can be both.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's becoming more and more because people have it during the holidays. Like, you know, I really like that cider, and you know, it's February 10th. You know, nothing special is going on, but I want to celebrate. What a great week it was or whatever. We're finding that for sure. Mm-hmm. It's becoming part of people's ritual, their week too. We have a lot of people talking about, you know, I buy a local, some local turkey from Ferndale, which is another, we do local turkey here from Ferndale and, or local chicken. And, we have a Sunday dinner with keepsake and cheese and chicken and vegetables from our local farms. And it's pretty awesome.
Well, and also not just holidays, we just gave a bottle of keepsake for a birthday gift last week. And we use it as part of gifting as well. So it works out well for not just holidays, but for gifts.
That's a great trend right now, giving consumables. And I don't mean that jokingly. Like, you know, I look into more minimalism lifestyle and instead of getting material stuff, like giving away something people can enjoy and consume. And I think cider fits that bill perfectly.
Well, it all started out that the last time we were out here, we came home with a couple bottles for at home, and a couple family members showed up, and we opened up a bottle. My mother-in-law loved it, so for her 70th birthday, one of the gifts we sent along was a bottle of the cider for her. So awesome.
She gonna be okay that you mentioned what year it was?
Maybe not, but
I know she's a big fan.
A young
son.
Yeah. You also left with a cat, too, a little kid.
Yeah, I was gonna get to that. We joked the last time we talked to you that we got out here and there's free kittens, and my wife and I sat outside. It was a little colder last fall when we were out and snuggled with kittens, and so we were bringing out my older daughter out here. She's a big cider enthusiast, and we got out here, and I was joking, like, oh, yeah, they'll probably have kittens available, and we get out here, and sure enough, there's a crate with two kittens in there. She picks out one, and that kitten slept on whoever held it for, like, an hour. Your kids looked at us longingly because they wanted to play with the kittens, and the kitten didn't want to go anywhere. So my daughter ended up talking her boyfriend into it, went home with it, and its name is now Cider. So
there you go. That's should have been keepsake.
Yeah, well, I told her that if she puts it in the vet books that it's full name should be keepsake cider, but it goes by cider. So
Nate, you're talking about all the different stuff that you're going to do throughout the year or have the ability to do throughout the year. We've got a new bottle in front of us that really is as fresh as it can be. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about what's being offered right here?
Yeah, so the current Aronia is our cider it's a long age cider, so it's about a year old now in the tanks. At least 3 months of that is going to be sitting on currants, and then about 2 months on Aronia berries. The idea with this cider is I want it to be about local fruit. So these berries were picked about 150, 200 yards from where we're sitting right now on our farm here. And the idea is I'm not going for juicy sweet. I'm not going for flavors. Flavors added. I'm going for the whole fruit. So we crushed this whole, the whole berries, the ronias and the currants, and then we put it into the cider and it sits in the cider. It's a huge mess. It took me forever to clean it up yesterday. But what you end up getting is the whole fruit component. So in the cider, you can taste the skin, for example, of the currant and the bitter sort of tannin, astringency of the aronia berry. And then on this year's cider, we have a dry version, and then what we're having today is the medium version, where we just added our own cider that we just pressed last week. So it's just a natural apple sugar, if you will. And it gives a little bit of body, and also counterbalances a little bit of the acidity of the currant and makes that berry pop a little bit. Bubbled it up, and that's what we're tasting today.
Again, I'm glad you're here to describe all those and use all those adjectives, because I was going to say it's nice and complex. The body came to mind. It seemed like it had a little more weight behind it than maybe the other two. And
The other two are dry, exactly. Yep.
So medium is what you said. Yep. So and the fruit flavor that comes through, and I was going to use the word sweet. That's what I picked up for them. Mm-hmm. But a nice sweetness, not like overbearing at all. I mean, it's very complex, but gratifying to drink.
Thank you.
And it's pretty.
Yeah, it is pretty. Yeah. Well,
and you talked about the tannins and stuff. And, you know, my favorite wine, especially now that it's starting to turn a little bit colder, is Cabernet. Mm-hmm. You know, just because of the fact that you get a little more of the tannins and a little more flavor. And I definitely am tasting that. And, you know, this one, I really liked it. This is really tasty.
Well, yeah, we're really excited about this one. This was last year we made our first batch of Kern Geronia, and I talked to the brewers in the area, and I brought it down to Randy and Derek and Laura and Tanya, and I brought it to Pete, and I think Andrew had a taste of it. I don't know if I ever got over to Steven and Genevieve, but everybody was like, it's good. Oh, I talked to Austin down at Forager's, it's good, but like, use a little more fruit. And I was like, well, I'm only going to take what I get. I use all the fruit that I have. And I'm like, that's just what we get this year. Next year, which is now, 2018, we got four times the amount of Kern and Aronia, and they all just went same size batch. I was like, well, this year I'm going for it. And it produces very, you know, I think very nice looking, sort of almost purplish, sort of red, which over time, I think we'll just get even prettier as the ages, because it'll start to clarify a little bit just naturally. I was really happy about that.
So that'll be in stores. It'll be on here as well.
Yeah, we'll definitely have it here. We already have it here on tap. We have a couple iterations of it that we played around with. So we're here at the tasting room, we're always going to be a little more experimental. We're always going to throw out some curveballs, things you can't get anywhere else. For example, the Kern Aronia that's on tap right now is different than this one because it's using a little bit of our single varietal Keepsake as a sweetener, which is just give it a whole different flavor.
That's a dry, right?
No, it's also a medium. We do have the dry from last year too, though, still. But we're going to play around at the tap room. So in fact, we have like a ginger cider. We're going to do, collaborate with Seven Songs, Melissa. Seven Songs. We're going to play around with some local products like that. We're going to do some single varietals as we go. But yeah, we have the Kern Aronia available right now on tap, but it'll be in the stores as soon as we get the labels. We're working on some labels. We redid all our labels. So
once the snow falls, you guys will close down. But last year, you guys were involved in one event. So that's coming back this year. Details to come out later, but you have high hopes for that event, and you're going to do something else as well.
Yes, we're doing. So we'll probably do at least two events in the winter. The first is called the Wassail. It's an English tradition where it's a blast. We've done it a few times, and some of your listeners might have been here for it. Basically, the way I describe it is you go out in the winter when things are starting to get past winter solstice, and you scare away all the cold, bad, you know, demons, whatever you want to call them, and you make a lot of noise. It's an old English tradition. There's a lot of poetry and singing and silliness. We usually throw a few fireworks in the mix. And you hang toast for the good spirits. I think for us that means blue jays and squirrels. And then you have some ciders and just fire pits, and it's a really good time.
You were wondering where those mountain lions came from.
Yeah, right.
They know there's going to be toast.
Yeah, they always come. They're always there. There's toast involved. So there's toast in the trees. It's a funny little event. We'll probably be doing that again this year. And then for our second year in a row, where it's in the talks. We haven't finalized the details, but with gear, Resource Outfitters, Imminent, and Armory, all good friends of ours, we are going to do our second annual Yeti Fest. So last year we did a snowshoe and cross-country skied candlelit trail out here with a fire pit and food. This year now we have our new space. We're going to be a little bit more accommodating, get a little more people out here. We had a great crowd last year, even though it was -1 degree, and that's not even counting wind chill. We had a pretty nice crowd, so I think this year it'll even get bigger. It was so much fun to see Minnesotans embracing the cold in the winter. I think that's
no bad weather.
Yes, exactly.
Bad preparation.
So we love it. We love getting people out here and outside in the winter. We'll be doing that again too. So that'll be Yeti Fest, and then the Wassail. So two things to look forward to.
Yeti Fest, I think, was early February last year.
It was, yes.
So probably similar time, I'm guessing. And obviously, you said after the solstice for the
There's a little bit of disagreement with the Wassail. I haven't decided whether I'm going to give in or not. Traditionally, it's in January. That's what they do in England. Mm-hmm. I feel like we don't have the same climate as England, so we should be not scaring away the cold and not bringing
that
in.
Early.
Yeah, it's too early for us.
Yeah.
That being said, there is it's a tradition that maybe we just have to because everybody else
it.
Wants. To, everybody else wonders why we're not doing it the right time. We'll see. I'll see how curmudgeon-y I get.
If people want to keep up with what's coming up with you guys in terms of the events, I'm guessing Facebook is a good place to catch up.
Yes, that's a good way of doing it. Facebook.
Also, what you have coming up for different ciders.
Yes, yep.
You put all your announcements on there.
Try to do a lot on Facebook, a little bit on Instagram, some on the website.
No Twitter account, though.
No, we haven't done that yet. There's two people, Tracy and I, and we one is enough for each of us. So if there's ever a third person on the crew that really likes Twitter, then we'll have a Twitter account.
I'm a Twitter guy. I tried to tag you guys the other day, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah,
I was puzzled.
We
no,
get,
I was joking.
We have had people tell us that, and it's just like a practical. I'm Facebook guy. Tracy's Instagram lady, and we would need a Twitter person.
You got to focus your energy where it works best for you.
Right.
So So Facebook, Instagram, website is a good place.
We're working on the website. Yep, we're redoing that, so that should be a good place soon.
Directions around there. There's a nice link to Google Maps for people to find
exactly,
you.
Exactly, yeah.
I had to use it the weekend before because I hadn't been here yet, so right. I'm glad to have finally made it out twice in 4 days. So.
And I'll use it again if you're a local. Turn by the old Vise Custom Shop, you know, where it used to be. So.
Take a left at 8. Easy enough. It's not officially 8 on your side, but it's 8 on the right side.
Doll Avenue.
Yep. And we should say when it is the weekend, you do have signs out there to point people because they are rural roads, narrow rural roads for two cars, but you have signs saying take a left.
Yeah.
Take a right. Hey, there it is.
It's fun to come out too. We've heard this and we feel this way too, is you do feel like you've gotten away. You know, you have to take that gravel road. You kind of have to earn it a bit, mm-hmm. but it's not that far away and you can feel like you're a world away. You know, you're surrounded by woods, you're in the farm, there's some animals sometimes, there's...
Turkeys.
Turkey, yeah.
Yep. The flock of turkeys I had to wait to cross the road, about 20 of them, so...
But don't let that deter you from coming out here, if you're not a turkey fan. Well done, beautiful space, obviously great ciders, keep up the good work, and always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks for having us out.
You too, I really enjoyed talking with you both.
Hey, it's Andrew Burns, and for this style of the week, we are talking about vanilla. That's right, we're going to Vanilla Porter. You know, like the name suggests, this beer starts out life as a regular, ordinary porter. Usually this is an American interpretation of a porter, which means a little bit stronger, usually, you know, above 5% alcohol, and pretty darn dark, although it doesn't have the coffee characteristic of, say, a stout. So we take that base beer, you know, medium strength, lots of dark, roasty, caramely flavors, maybe a hint of chocolate, and infused vanilla. Now, some brewers also at that step add some lactose or milk sugar, which adds a sweetness to a beer. So we can have vanilla porters that are quite sweet and creamy, or vanilla porters that are more middle of the road and without that creamy sweetness, but still have the vanilla kick. Now, this is an example of what brewers have been doing forever, which is finding new ingredients and finding new ways to doctor up and change and reinterpret old styles. And it takes a traditional British style and adds a twist to it. It's a fantastic dessert beer, but don't be afraid to drink it on a hot summer's day. It can be surprising how refreshing those dark beers can be.
That's going to put a wrap on today's show. Thanks to Nate at Keepsake Cidery for hosting us out at his beautiful facility. Just a great space for folks to go check out every weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Take in some of the nice hard ciders they have. Take in some of the nice food they have now. They have the sandwiches. Also, they have a bevy of local products you can try. Cheeses from Cannonbell's Cheese and different assortment of options. I know no one's going to go hungry or thirsty visiting them.
Of course not.
So we appreciate Nate's time. Our next show is going to be in 2 weeks on October 27th, 11 a.m. here on KYMN Radio, 1080, 95 The One. We're going to have Gravity Storm Brewery Cooperative, a new brewery down in Austin, downtown Austin, Minnesota. So we're excited to have those guys up to talk about their new operation. They just opened here this summer, so a small operation, obviously a very new operation. So it should be fun to see where they are at this early date in their life. So good things, I'm sure, to come from them. As always, you can find prior shows on our website, ontapnorfield.com, or on your podcast platform of preference. We're, 43 shows into this deal now, 44 now. So plenty of shows to go check out, see who we've talked to. Like we had today, we had Nate back for the second time. We've got a number of guests who've come back now for the second time, and I'm sure we will have third-time guests. But we always like having new people on, like next time with Gravity Storm. You can find us on social, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, where we post photos and videos occasionally and kind of keep people up to date with what we're doing. Our Facebook page is a good place to see who's coming up on our show. It's getting a little dry right now. We don't have a lot on there because we're still ironing out some of the details about this winter. We've been talking, kind of teasing here for the last few shows, and it's coming time to put up or shut up on if we're going to follow through on that. And hopefully we have some answers for all our adoring fans out there soon to let them know what's coming up this winter, because we've got a cool idea. We just need to figure out if we can execute it. Until next time, cheers.
Cheers.